Let's see who's here, and then we'll talk about why these groups are on the board. Alrighty. So, what does all this stuff have to do with anything that we've been talking about for the last 3 weeks?
I don't know.
Okay. Let's backtrack a little bit. For the last couple weeks, you guys have been planning promotions. We started with defining our terms way back in week one. And then in week two, you guys got together, started planning a promotional idea. Last week, we did remotes and came up with...
Last week,
we did remotes. Well, there you go. We did remotes last week. It was fun. You should have come. So, last week we planned remotes, you guys got a little taste of that. And so now we need to talk about how all that stuff fits into a little bigger context. That's what all this stuff is doing on the board. Because everything your station does, everything your media outlet does, let's not even call it a station, whether it be a radio station, TV station, internet site, independent film, whatever, right? Whatever we're talking about in terms of media, it all has to do, first off, with that big word in the middle, and that is branding. You okay?
Yeah.
All right. Now, branding is a term you might have heard before. Marketers love to throw it out there. Some people said that branding is the most important thing about marketing. Other people, it helps, but it's not really the big thing. Branding really, like many other things in life, is all about choices. Right? Think about when you go to the store, if all you want to buy is a bottle of pop, if you want to buy some soda, you go down the soda aisle, how many choices do you have?
Oh my God.
Right? Hundreds. Okay? Depending on the store, you might have literally dozens, maybe even hundreds of choices. Right? And that's just if you want one kind of product. If you want just something, good Lord. Okay? So, since you've got all these choices, then if I am a business owner, if I'm putting out a product, right, if I'm the guy who puts out Lay's potato chips, or I put out even something like Cheese Whiz or mayonnaise or ketchup, basic stuff that you hardly ever think about, right? Nobody thinks out of it. Most people don't care about the kind of ketchup they get, or you care a lot, right? That's kind of the way things go. You're either like, I don't know, just go get some mustard. Or, I can't believe you got this. Oh my God. Are you crazy? Right? That all has to do with branding because at the end of the day, that's what it's about. It's about influencing your choice. Okay? So branding really is pointing out what is distinctive about something. What you want to do is you want to make a clear distinction between whatever it is you're focusing on and its nearest competition, if there is any.
That looks Canadian. Pointing oot.
Pointing oot. That is a U, I promise. Let me shorten this a little
bit. There you go.
Pointing oot. Very well. And notice that I'm using the word something kind of deliberately here, pointing out what is distinctive about something. Perhaps the two most general words I've ever used in my entire life. What does distinctive mean? Hard to say. Something? You mean anything? Well, yes, actually. Branding applies to everything you can think of. If it involves having a choice between that thing and something else of comparable service or type, then there is branding going on. Okay? Just today, I was driving in, and I was flipping back and forth on the radio because I didn't particularly want to listen to the bad bit that was on Drew and Mike this morning. No offense if you like bad stand-up comedy, but it was there, and it was terrible. So I'm flipping around the dial, and I land on 106.7 The D, the new classic rock kid in town. The D is interesting because we have not had more than one classic rock station in this town for about 20 years. Since Wheels went off the air way back in the day. Okay? I don't know if anybody in the room actually still remembers WLLC. It's like me and Tim. Okay.
Thank you.
And Alice was around for a little while. You're right. I should give more love to Ted. You're exactly right. I'm forgetting about Alice, but so is everybody else. So I'm flipping back and forth between those two. And I just, as somebody not only who's worked in radio, but who also studies marketing, I was wondering to myself, I wonder how the D is going to make themselves different from CSX. Because in many ways, CSX is the 800-pound gorilla in the room. Right? They've been around forever. They've got some serious money. They've got big-time brand recognition. Well, what does brand recognition mean? Have you ever thought about that?
Popularity of the brand.
Popularity of the brand, but there's something more to it.
Familiarity of the brand.
Ah, there we go. Familiarity of the brand. What were you going to say?
Everybody knows it.
Right. Everybody knows what it is, okay? Even if you haven't used the product, right, you know what it is. Let's have a little test. What happens in Vegas? Right, How many of you guys have actually been to Las Vegas? Wow.
I'll never talk.
More of that's, you know what, you don't have to. That's more than I thought. Usually when I ask that question in class, everybody knows the answer to the question, right? Everybody knows the second half of the sentence. But, like, four people have actually been to Vegas.
Everybody watched Rainbow.
Right, so there you go. And you're right, we all watch CSI, we all know the deal. But That statement, what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, is a perfect example of brand recognition, right? Because not only is it instantly recognizable because it was clever and it was catchy, but it also now has taken on a life of its own to the point where you use it for other stuff, right? Like, oh, you don't want to ask me about that. What happens in my basement stays in my basement, right? You don't need to know.
Happens in the grotto stage.
See, there it is. So you get the idea. When something grows beyond its original intention, that's a sign of how successful it was. Okay? If you start using it for other things. And brand recognition also is important because one of the things that companies do to stand out from their competition, to brand themselves against their competition, is they also want to pick a logo that is instantly recognizable and works. Something that cannot be confused with anything else. And that even if you're not really super familiar with the product, you know what it means on site. Right? Without anybody having to tell you. We all are sort of reading from the same cultural playbook. We all know what that means. For example, looking around, let's see.
The
Nike swoosh, right? That's one. I got one D in class, maybe two.
What's up? The Coke bottle.
Shape of the Coke bottle. You're actually reading ahead a little bit, but yes, the shape of the Coke bottle versus the shape of the Pepsi bottle. The reason why the Coke bottle has a distinctive shape is so you can recognize it and distinguish it from the competition. So even the shape of the bottle is part of branding, right? What? What were you going to say? Sorry, go ahead.
The image right underneath your nose.
The image right under. Yes, I wore this shirt on purpose. Because we were going to talk about branding today. Exactly right. And I want to talk specifically for a minute about the D's that I'm seeing in the room. I assume by wearing your Detroit baseball caps that you are in fact huge Tiger fans.
That one's hockey.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
But yes, yes, the both.
Yeah. Okay. And usually when I ask that question, somebody laughs and goes, I hate baseball. But I'll wear that D all day long.
Yeah.
Right? And see, and there's people going, hell yeah. Okay. This is another example of something that has grown beyond its original purpose. That English D, if you want to get right down to brass tacks, it's just about the Detroit Tigers. That's all it is. That's all it's supposed to be about. That's all it was intended to be when it was originally invented. It was intended to sort of say, this is Detroit, just like the big red B is Boston, you know, and the NY is for New York. So that's what it was for. But this is another example of something that has become culturally tied into an entire city, or at least a region. I saw something really funny on Facebook the other day. A little picture going around, the picture of some, I don't remember who it was, but it said, at the top of it said, oh, you're from Detroit. And at the bottom it said,
oh, yes.
So which suburb are you really from?
Tell me stories about the suburb.
Yeah. Because everybody.
It's Willy Wonka.
Willy Wonka, right.
Because like
he's going,
oh, that's nice. Yeah.
Right, exactly. Because that's just, you know, oh, I'm from Detroit. Yeah, okay. So you're from Lake Orion?
Yes.
Exactly. I'm not really from Detroit. But anyway, I digress just a little bit. My point is, stand by, my point is that the D now, it's not just about the Tigers, right? Just like what happens in Vegas stays in Vegas, that D is all about Detroit. You go anywhere in the country, people are going to know what that means. Now, they may not assume you're a Tiger fan. They'll assume you're from Detroit, and they might even give you a little bit of a berth. They might even give you just a little more room on the way down the
side. And they do that.
They only mess with me because
I'm from Detroit.
Right. And, but now, and this brings up another link in the chain, if you will. See how we're putting these things together. Okay? So we've got a logo that was originally intended to mean one thing. And now it means something else. Right? Now it's identified with the city. And to take that one step further, our friends at Chrysler are geniuses. Okay? You guys all watched the Super Bowl?
Yeah.
And did everybody see the Clint Eastwood ad?
Yeah.
Okay. Now, whatever you think of the ad, okay, the ad is part of Chrysler's Imported from Detroit campaign. And that, I got to tell you, is the smartest piece of marketing I've seen in about 15 years. Right? It's genius. Because it's just that one phrase. A, it tells you where everything's coming from. Imported from Detroit. But by saying imported from, it's kind of poking fun at the idea or pointing out the idea that, hey, Detroit's not really like anywhere else. It's different here. And we're bringing this stuff to you, right? And for those of us who are here, we're like, damn right it is, you know? And that regional or that sort of city pride, that happens a lot in a lot of places. But Chrysler, because we make cars, they've really hit on something that was kind of floating around the popular culture already, I think because of, in some ways, the perception of the D around the country. Again, the idea that, oh, that guy's from Detroit. You know, I'm not sure what's going on there, right? And that's both good and bad.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes it works to your favor, sometimes not so much. But in general, I agree. In general, I think it's a positive thing. And there are and the Imported from Detroit campaign that Chrysler's got going on, that's a way of branding not only their products, but think about the text of that ad. It's also a way of branding the city and even branding the industry, right? Branding the auto industry. The copy that was involved in that ad was, hey, don't count us out.
Right.
Because while you weren't looking, we started doing stuff that everybody's digging. So you might want to take a second look, right? That's the subtext of that ad. What do you think?
I also thought it was a subtext, like playing on the foreign cars, like when they say imported from.
Very good point. Absolutely. Usually we think of importing as a bad thing.
Yeah.
But here they're taking that concept and they're turning it on its head, right? So yeah, it's imported, but it's imported from Detroit, so it's a kick.
Right.
Right. Exactly. A little play on words going on. So now you can start to see where branding might exist where you didn't see it before. Or maybe you did see it, and you didn't bother to talk about it before. But I want to talk about, like I said, branding, again, is all about choices. And while we're talking about branding, I want to illustrate another key concept, and that is that branding is used not to necessarily tell us about the physical features or the advantages of a product that actually exist. What branding is used for is to tell us the story of the product as we want it to be. Okay? How many people do you know have a Jeep? Well, everybody knows, like you guys have, how many people have all driven Jeeps or know somebody who has a Jeep? Right? Here in town? Okay? Like they're going to go up in the mountains any minute?
Yeah.
Right? Here's the thing about Jeeps. And no offense, if you're a Jeep driver, more power to you. It's a free country. You can drive whatever you want. But the Jeep is not about... It's a cool car. People like them. People like the style. But it's not about the car, right? It's about the image that's associated with the car. Because Jeeps are all about freedom and versatility and power. And I could go anywhere I want. Now, I won't. more often than not, I won't. I'm going to go to the store and I'll go home. But at any minute, if I wanted to, exactly, I could go right over that embankment and God knows where I'd end up. Right.
But you'd be fine.
Now, I'm probably not going to do that. But Jeep has done a really good job of planting the image of me doing that in my head. So that when I get in my Jeep, I feel like I'm the master of the world, whether I am or not. Right? And, well, there's a psychological thing that goes on there as well, and then you drive like it, too. Like, but anyway, again, my point is you're not selling the thing, you're selling the idea behind the thing. Okay? And I want to illustrate that point a little more with our friends from Coke and Pepsi. We talked about the shape of the bottle a little bit before. And Coke and Pepsi is probably the best example of two products that are, frankly, let's be honest, nearly identical.
Hang on.
I know. Don't hit me yet. I'll get there. When I say nearly identical, what I mean is when you get right down to it, Coke and Pepsi is really just brown fizzy water in a bottle. There are differences. Don't get me wrong. Absolutely there are differences, and I am not going to sit here and tell you that Coke and Pepsi are the same. I know better, right? But when you really get right down to it, on an elemental level, it's just a brown fizzy beverage in a bottle. And if you don't care which one of those you have, then it doesn't matter to you. But both of those companies have done a really good job of making a distinct difference between the two. Not only in how it tastes, because if anybody tells you they taste the same, they're lying to you. Do not try to mix Pepsi with anything. It's a bad idea. It just doesn't mix the same. I'm telling you right now, rum and Pepsi is a bad call. Thank you. Now everybody, okay, fine, yeah. All right. So,
liquor and energy drink is a bad idea.
Well, anyway, that's a discussion for another time. My point is that there is a difference. That's what I was trying to get at. But the differences, chemical differences, minor chemical differences notwithstanding, right, they really are the same thing. So if I have to sell that in a marketplace where I have literally hundreds of choices when it comes to beverages, what do? I have to make my product feel different. I have to make it, I may have to make it be different in some cases, but really it comes down to making it feel different, selling the experience of what it is to drink Coke or drink Pepsi. And what you need to understand is about these two brands and how they got to be so different is where they came from in the first place. Coca-Cola is really the old kid on the block. Coca-Cola is what we call a legacy brand. It's been around forever. It probably will be for a long, long time. Crazy decisions notwithstanding, but we'll get to that.
They should put Coke back in there.
You can't. And the idea, and Coca-Cola, as you guys know, has been around since, what, the 1880s?
I just gave a speech on this.
Did you?
1870-like.
Okay, so 1870s, 1880s, somewhere in there, yeah. Right? There is no disputing the fact that Coke was really the first mass-marketed
drug
or fizzy beverage on the market. Now, you're not wrong to call it a drug, because the idea was, back in the 1870s, the beginning of the industrial age, okay, suddenly you've got these people who are spending all day in hot, noisy, sweaty, messy factories. They don't have time for lunch. They don't have time to go somewhere and have somebody prepare them a meal or go somewhere and prepare a meal for themselves. Because you got to remember, back then there's also no McDonald's. So eating's like a deal, right? It takes time to cook stuff, prepare stuff. There's no such thing as TV dinners, okay? So leaving to eat could take hours. And then you come back and do whatever. Well, no business owner at that time is going to do that. They're not going to let you go. So Coke sees a need. They think, okay, we'll just put this beverage that is guaranteed to give you energy, and boy, will it. We put it in a bottle. We make those bottles easy to carry, easy to open, and we make them. We just go around work sites and say, here you go. I know you got about 10 minutes. Here you go. This will refresh you and get you ready to go for that second half of the shift. That was the idea behind Coca-Cola, frankly. And yes, back in the day, it did in fact have a small amount of cocaine in it. And back then, before we really knew all of the health effects of cocaine, it seemed like a great idea. Not so much because we understand that yes, while Coca-Cola sure, or while cocaine sure will give you the energy to get through the day, it'll do other things as well. So they've decided, yeah, you probably shouldn't mass market that. That's probably a bad idea. Well, Coca-Cola was so successful that other people said, well, I bet we can get in on this beverage market, right? I bet we can give Coca-Cola some competition because they started making a whole lot of money and basically running away with the racket. All right. Well, here comes Pepsi. And Pepsi and Coke are slugging it out back and forth around soda fountains all across America. And this continues until about 1920. Okay. And in 1920, the Great Depression happens. Everybody takes a great big hit. But Coca-Cola is smart enough to know we should invest in other places besides America. So they start marketing around the world before anybody else does. And then, very interesting thing happens. World War II breaks out, okay? And Coca-Cola hits on maybe the greatest promotion of all time. Because what happens in World War II is you've got millions of American men, most of whom have never been away from the place they were born, more than 5 or 10 or 15 miles. Back then, people just did not move around as much as we do now. And in many cases, we still don't move around very much. But, I mean, I'm talking people from Kansas and Kentucky and Nebraska who have never been outside the country, let alone on a different continent, right? And suddenly they're in places that they can't pronounce. They're looking at food they've never seen before. They can't talk to anybody because they don't speak the language. So you're completely and totally lost. Coca-Cola contacts the War Department and says, hey, tell you what we're going to do. We're gonna donate tons and tons of Coca-Cola. You guys put it in care packages, send it out to the guys on the front, and we'll just give them a little taste of home, right? The idea was, remember what you're fighting for. This is what you're coming back to. You want Coca-Cola, right? And it was one of the best marketing promotions on the planet. Because I'll tell you right now, if you're in the middle of a jungle, if you're in a foxhole and you don't know if you're going to make it out, somebody hands you anything for free, you're probably going to drink it, okay? Because you got a minute, nobody's trying to kill you. God, I could really go for a Coke right now. Well, here it is. Look at that. Genius. And so they donate thousands, hundreds of thousands of bottles of Coke. And it goes out to everywhere for free. So much so that now Coca-Cola is identified as part of America. Right? You show a Coke bottle to somebody from a different country, they'll recognize it and they'll assume you're American. If you have a Coke bottle with you, because it's just the way it is. Mom, apple pie, Coca-Cola. Simple as that.
McDonald's.
Yeah, that's true. So Coca-Cola does this brilliant promotion of basically giving their product away. And because they literally have a captive audience, those guys can't go anywhere. It's not like you can just walk away. What happens when they come back home?
They drink Coke.
They drink Coca-Cola. They're Coca-Cola drinkers now. You've got an entire generation of people who, given a choice, will now drink Coca-Cola, where they might not have before. Okay? So, job done, right? We've established our beachhead, we've got our market, we've got our foot in the door, and we're not going anywhere now. We're in. Well, meanwhile, everybody else who makes brown fizzy water drinks is going, oh, crap. Now what do we do? They beat us to it. They really did. They outfoxed us. Well, Pepsi does not take this lion down because the Pepsi guys figured out something that still holds true to this day, and that is this. Coca-Cola, after the war, is the brand to beat if you're talking about soda, right? Everybody's drinking it. It's got a huge favorable recognition. You know, everybody knows what it is. Everybody goes, oh, yeah, Coke. Oh, my God, it reminds me of that time in Bora Bora. Don't get me started on that. And Pepsi's got a job to do. They have a choice to make. They can either go head-to-head with the 800-pound gorilla, or they can try and outfox him, just like they got outfoxed about 20 years earlier. And they hit on something really, really important. There is one thing that every child in this country has in common with every other child in this country. No matter where you're from, no matter what you do for a living, no matter what you like, no matter what you eat, or who your friends are, kind of, but I'm going somewhere else. What do you think?
School. They were born.
Well, okay. Biological necessities notwithstanding, The one thing that every young person has in common with every other young person, no matter who or where you who you are or where you're from, is they don't want to be like their parents.
There you go.
At least not right away. Later on, if the boomerang hasn't come around on you yet, it will. One day you'll realize your parents knew more than you thought they did. But when they're growing up, when they're frankly most of you your age, you're like, ah, whatever. I know what's going on. My parents don't get it. I know what's up, right? That doesn't mean, you know, you don't like your parents. It just means they just don't understand, right? Pepsi ties into that vibe, okay? They know that's going on. And so Pepsi is like the cool kid on the block going, yeah, I know. I know your parents don't get you, but I do. I totally do. And you can see it in the marketing campaigns that these companies have chosen to use. Coca-Cola focuses on being Coca-Cola. Right? Being solid and reliable and always there, never going to change. You loved us now, you loved us back then, you will love us, we promise, right? And you've got this idea that Coca-Cola just is part of the landscape. It's never going away. So in that case, in that sense, it is it's ultimately reliable, right? Totally cool. And you've got things like, recently they started, they brought in the polar bears, but they keep using that stuff again and again and again. And Santa Claus. Thank you for bringing up Santa Claus. It is a fact that the American depiction of Santa Claus, dude with the white beard and the little red suit and the black belt, the whole nine yards, that's a Coca-Cola ad from 1936. The reason why Santa Claus in America looks the way we think of, if you close your eyes and think of Santa Claus, the reason you get that red and white image is because of Coca-Cola. Because they put an ad in the New York Post with a Norman Rockwell painting of the big fat guy with the little red nose in the red and white suit, because red and white is Coca-Cola colors. And that image, there's something about it. It's seared into everybody's memory, right? That is Santa Claus. Now, if you go to other countries where they have Santa Claus and Christmas, like, you know, Germany and Britain and Finland and places like that, totally different image, totally different idea. Not our Santa Claus at all, right? Our Santa Claus is there because of Coca-Cola, because they wanted to sell more beverages during the holidays, so they needed to come up with this icon, okay, this symbol of what it was. What do you think?
You say they created the Santa Claus?
Well, they didn't create the concept of Santa Claus, but image...
Not created the concept.
Well...
the image of that...
Yes. Concept. Absolutely. Yeah, the first mass market depiction of Santa Claus, in the way that we think of him now, is the red and white suit and the black belt and the big bushy white beard. It was from a Coca-Cola ad. So yes, absolutely. So that's the kind of marketing strategy that Coke pursued, right? They're thinking, okay, we want to portray ourselves as reliable. We're not going anywhere. We're always going to be here for you, right? Well, Pepsi can't do that, because Pepsi doesn't have that same circumstance. So they have a different choice to make. And think about the marketing that you might have seen from Pepsi recently. One of the things that Pepsi does that Coca-Cola does not do is they will retool their marketing about every 3 or 4 years. They'll find a different spokesperson. They'll change their logo. They'll change their bottle. They'll change everything, trying to do what? Right, trying to keep up with what's going on. Exactly. And so what you have is, if you think about some of the people who have been associated with Pepsi in terms of selling it recently, Michael Jackson is one of the most famous. Beyonce, Britney Spears, Ray Charles came in for a little while because there was a little bit of a soul revival going on.
The new X Factor.
What's that?
The new X Factor winner.
Yeah, the X Factor winner with Elton John and Flavor Flav.
Yeah.
Right, stupid. God, that commercial was off. But now you're getting the idea. Whereas Coca-Cola is kind of like, here we are, boom, rock solid, right? Pepsi's like, hey, what's going on? This cool thing is going on. How about this? Oh, look. We're still up with it. We're still hip. We still got it. We're still going on, right? Right?
Mm-hmm.
We're changing. We're keeping up with what's going on, just like you. Right? That's the idea. That's the psychological connection. is that Pepsi is keeping up with what's going on because that's what you guys do. Right? And so that's the difference. So really, what you've got going on is Coca-Cola is saying, we're here, we're never going anywhere, we're your parents. Pepsi's saying, we're changing, we're evolving, we're doing new things, we're doing fun things, we're doing exciting things, we're you. Okay? And so there's that identification. That's what branding's all about. When you brand a product, whatever it is, whether it be a product or a service or a station or a person even, what you want is that psychological connection for that person to, for there's something about that person or that concept or that product that you go, oh, that they totally get me. I'm just like that guy, or I'm just like that thing, right? That's what they're going for. The idea of making something distinctive is also so that you can identify with it. And the reason they want that to happen is because we make branding choices very early in life, okay? And we stick with those choices for a long time unless something goes wrong. This is all about building loyalty, right? And speaking of until something goes wrong, one of the things that Pepsi hit on, to get back to Coke and Pepsi for a minute, one of the things that Pepsi hit on in the 70s was, you know what? We don't really have any data on whether people actually like Coca-Cola or not. So the question was, do people buy Coca-Cola because they like it, or do they just buy it out of habit? Do they just buy it because they buy it and that's the way it is? Well, what they did was they put together this thing called the Pepsi Challenge. And you guys might have heard about that, or you might have seen old clips on YouTube or something like that. Well, I was there, more or less. And back in the 70s, what they decided to do was they decided to film blind taste tests. And they went to cities all across the country, and they sat people down in front of a video camera, in front of a table with two plain white styrofoam cups, and said, here, taste A and taste B. And tell me which one you like better. And hands down, we're talking 70-30, right? Hands down, people who were tested liked the taste of Pepsi better. If they didn't know what the two of them were, if nobody told you this is Coke and this is Pepsi, before their internal prejudices could come in, right? If nobody knew what they were, then in a blind taste test, more people liked the taste of Pepsi. And it started to have a difference because now Pepsi could say, aha, now we've got numbers, now we've got data. Now we can say it's a fact. More people like Pepsi than Coke. It's true. It's math. What's up?
You said the study was done by Pepsi?
Well, their marketing people paid for it, but they hired an outside accounting firm to actually do the math. And
yeah, but couldn't they just, like...
That's fraud.
Make the Coke flat, you know, then put
Well, that's why you hire an independent firm. You hire an independent firm to do a scientific... I'm talking about an actual scientific study. So what you're thinking, from a marketing standpoint, well, we'll just leave the Coke out in the sun. We'll just make it taste nasty.
I didn't know they brought in a third party.
No. No, that's a very good point. This was not at inconsiderable expense. They brought in a third party. They tried to make it as fair and scientific as possible because their marketing people knew, or at least had a feeling, that given a choice on taste alone, people are probably going to like Pepsi more, and turns out they were right. And it starts to have an effect. And in the 80s, they're chipping away at Coca-Cola's market share. So suddenly the 800-pound gorilla isn't so big anymore. Okay? And Pepsi's coming up. Well, now Coca-Cola, which used to dominate the market, is starting to lose market share, not only to Pepsi, but to other things as well. And they start freaking out. What's up?
Is that why they started branding other types of soda like Sprite?
That's part of it. Part of it was we need to be able to sell more than one thing. Because as much as they like our product, you don't always want a Coke, right? Sometimes you want a Sprite or Mountain Dew or whatever. Sometimes you just want something different. And that's just expanding your brand so that you sell other stuff. I'm talking specifically about Coca-Cola now. Coca-Cola, which used to absolutely dominate, is now suddenly seeing their market share get chipped away, and they do what on paper seems like a really smart idea. because they've got access to the same data that Pepsi does, right? This data from the Pepsi Challenge. They look at this information, and you better believe that Coca-Cola went and checked the math. Because if you the interesting thing about that is if you put something in your commercial that you represent as fact that is provably not true, that opens you up to a lawsuit, right? So when you talk about why didn't Pepsi just doctor the study, they could have, but Coca-Cola's got very good lawyers.
Yeah, I was saying that they might have, you know.
Right. They could have, but they didn't because they knew that they'd get caught. Okay.
If I heard that, I would just be like, well, you know what I mean? If I heard that Pepsi was doing this challenge and then that Pepsi won, I'd be like, of course Pepsi won.
Well,
they ran the challenge.
And you assume that now, but they did. When you see the ads, they make a point of saying, this is an independent taste test. It has nothing to do with us. We're just filming the results. And you can choose whether to believe that or not. And I can see that there's skepticism in the audience already. You're all going, whatever. Science. Don't bother me with facts, please. Okay. What do you think?
Well, sometimes they don't always show the results. Sometimes they just show people trying them and saying they like Pepsi more.
Right.
They don't actually say, well, it ended up being this way.
Right. But that's a good point. But that was the point of the whole campaign, was to be able to say the numbers work out. Now, it was a huge gamble because it might not have worked. Okay, but it did, and that then causes. What do you got before we start?
I was saying, wasn't it back then illegal to say the other brand?
It wasn't
like
illegal.
Brand X.
That's a great question. It's not illegal. It is not illegal to mention your competition in your ads. But if you use anything resembling their logo or their name, the way they print it on their bottles, you have to. It costs money because that's a trademarked entity, right? So the reason why you don't mention your competition directly is because you don't want to pay for it. What's up?
So it's like how like the more recent Pepsi and Coke commercials where the two guys are there, one's got a Coca-Cola ad, one's got Pepsi ad.
Right. What you'll notice is those are Pepsi Max commercials, right? I think.
Yeah.
But they make it pretty clear without coming out and saying it that that's the Coke guy, right? The two delivery drivers sitting at the bar, right? And then one guy looks over and goes,
"Is he wearing a Coke?"
Or is he? Does it say?
Yeah,
okay,
it says Coke.
That's right. Thank you. No, you're right. It's been a while since I saw one, but you're absolutely right. It's really obvious. But you'll notice as soon as you see that Coke logo on the screen, look for the fine print, because at the bottom of the screen in little white letters it'll say, "Copyright Coca-Cola Company." Okay, they have to acknowledge where that came from. What's up?
Didn't McDonald's do a kind of like the same thing with their Big Mac compared to something else? But wasn't there controversy over that too, though, of how they did that?
There have been in the past, to sort of go off the success of the whole Coke Pepsi thing, there have been other sort of head-to-head competitions. Mm-hmm. Burger King used to brag all the time that in a national survey, the Whopper was preferred over the Big Mac, hands down. Mm-hmm. You know. So that theme has been used before, not as much, because what happened when the results of this thing came in, Coca-Cola takes a look at the data and it goes, oh man, we got a problem. People don't actually like what we make. Wow. Okay, didn't see that coming. So on paper, this makes all the sense in the world. They look at the data, they go, okay, what we're doing isn't working, people don't like what we're doing. Am I missing something? Thanks. People don't like what we're doing. We've got information and data that proves this. So what do you do? Well, we do something. We find out something that people will like. So they change Coke. They change the formula. They do, in many ways, what is unthinkable. This thing that everybody has loved for years turns out, oh my gosh, people don't actually like it. All right, we'll change it up then. And it was an absolute disaster.
That new Coke?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
This is 1985. New Coke comes out, and everybody loses their mind. Because here's the thing. We know what we like, and we know what we don't like. We're also really, really fickle. We change our minds a lot at the drop of a hat. And so here's what happens. The Coca-Cola folks go, well, okay, you don't like Coke? We'll change Coke. Are you happy now? No, because I want Coke the way it was. And they're like, what do you mean you want Coke the way it was? Shut up, I do. So they've wasted now millions of dollars in reformulating Coke, changing the packaging, changing the bottle, putting out all this product, and for a while they did it before they could pull the old product back. So you had two versions of Coke on the shelf at the same time. So now houses all across America, it's like bringing home Diet Pop when you didn't mean to bring home the Diet Pop, right? And you get it out of the bag and you're like, oh God, ruins your day, right? Now you've got that going on a grand scale because, oh, you bought the bad Coke. Oh, crap. And so sure enough, after about 6 months, this is a huge bomb. So now they've got to spend more money bringing the new stuff back and trying to get the old stuff back out onto the shelves. Okay? So all told, this took about a year and a half to sort out, and it was a nightmare. And the CEO of Coke did, in fact, lose his job because that was a really, really bad call. Because it did damage not only to the product, but to the brand. Coca-Cola was now not seen as this great, big, huge, unbeatable thing. Now it was just another product, which, if you're Coca-Cola, is the kiss of death. Because it's kind of like a Rocky movie, right? Now that I know I can hurt you, now it's on, Jack. Right? Before you were this big, huge, unbeatable thing. Now I know you're just a man, so here we go. Right? Same deal. You're not a monster, you're just Coke. I can handle you. See? Thank you very much. I'm glad you're paying attention. So this shows you how branding can really, in some ways, granted these are extreme examples, but this shows you how branding can play a really important role in how a product is perceived and the choices that follow from that perception. Okay? Think about all the things that you like, all the things that you make the choice to bring into your house or to wear or to watch. Okay? Chances are that when you decided to watch that thing or eat that thing or drink that thing or wear that thing, that you had another choice. You could have bought something else. But for whatever reason, you chose to buy the Tiger hat, right? Or pick up that bottle of Verner's. Or whatever the case may be. And it's because there's something about that brand, there's something about that thing that you identify with, right? It's almost like a tribal or a clan affiliation, like, oh, those are my people, right? They get me. You feel this association with that thing. And I know it sounds strange to say, dude, it's just a sandwich. What are you talking about? How many Pepsi versus Coke drinkers do we have? If you're a Pepsi drinker, show me some hands. A few. How many Coke drinkers do we have? Oh, wow. See? And look, you all sat together. No, I'm kidding. But you get the idea. And given a choice, you will probably still make that choice, right? Given a choice between the two, you'll kind of default to one or the other. Right?
It's horrible.
Because like and when we go out, my wife loves Diet Pepsi, hates Coca-Cola. So the first thing she always asks the server is, are you guys Coke or Pepsi? And they'll say Coke, and she'll go, oh.
There she goes. Ah, Sprite.
Right. And then she's like, iced tea, I guess. Right, you know. But we make these choices a lot, and we make them often. And one more thing I want to say about, we talked about logos a little bit earlier. The Coke logo, the Pepsi logo, people spend a lot of time and a lot of money trying to figure those things out because you want something that is iconic, something that you can show to somebody and they know it and they see it and they recognize it immediately. And all the things that have become associated with that logo suddenly become really important. And this concept is still alive and well, to bring it back to why we walked in the room in the first place today. When you're talking about radio and TV stations, logos and branding are really, really important to what you guys are going to do because you need to brand your station to make it stand out from the competition. See? Brought it all the way around. You need to brand your station and try to make a difference between all the different choices that you have, especially now. Because I'm not just limited to stations that are in my area, right? If I want to listen to a station from LA or Chicago, I can do that now. It's called the internet. And pretty soon the internet will be in your car. And then, if it's not already, right? And then it's on. Now you can listen to anything from anywhere. So branding is going to become more important. And branding then, selling the idea, not necessarily the station itself, but selling the idea of the station, informs everything that's going to happen at that station, from the people that get hired because of how they sound, or the attitude they have, or the kinds of promotions that we're going to decide to do, because that fits our image or it doesn't, right? All those choices are made because they either fit into the brand or they don't. So when you're looking around at, you know, if you're interning at a station or if you start working at a station, figure out what they're branding themselves to be. Not what they are, necessarily, but what they want people to think they are. Because when you're branding something, you're not just selling the thing, right? You're not just selling the brown fizzy water. You're selling the experience. There are emotions and feelings and experiences that are tied to that brand through the marketing that gets used to sell it. Alright? Think about that. Let that settle in. When we come back 15 minutes from now, we'll talk about the other things that are on the board, and we will also review for the midterm. 15 minutes, please.